Still mom, I'm okay, okay.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mrs. Feminist Podcast. It is Friday, October 26th. This is the weekend before Halloween. So today you are in for a spooky treat as we talk about historic witches. Were they really casting spells, or did they simply dare to dream? Before I go on, I want to share with you guys some exciting news, which is that my second novel, Tangled on Tour, is finally out and available to buy. You guys can go to www.alexandralydia.com for all the purchase links. It's available as an ebook, or you can get it in print right away this time, which is awesome. And make sure that if you haven't read the prequel, Tangled in Tennessee, you do that as well, so you're all caught up on all the hot drama. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who has bought a copy, and to those of you who don't, please do. And I only say this 70% self-servingly, but when someone that you know finally has something released to the world, whether it's a song or a book or a piece of art, that's so important and so valuable, because so much work goes into all of that. It's not as easy as putting some things on a page and then just throwing it out onto Facebook. So much work goes into it, and it takes a lot of vulnerability and courage to say, like, here, world, here's something that I worked hard on, maybe you'll like it. So spend the $3 to get it. Make sure you share their post so that your other friends can see it and maybe buy it. It means so much. And when people do that, it just kind of validates all the hard work I've done. And it makes me feel like I did produce something valuable. So yeah, it's so, so easy to support your friends, you guys. So please go out, go find any friend of yours who has ever done anything cool and share the crap out of it and spend your money on it, because, yeah, it's a big deal. So I wanted to say that. I also have a correction to make, and this is really hard for me. No, I'm just kidding. So I got a voicemail the other day from your favorite Mrs. Feminist co-host, Perry Holden, my dad. And so I missed his call, so he leaves a voicemail, and it's so freaking daunting. He's like, hey, Allie, it's me, your dad. I've been listening to your podcast. We need to talk. And so in my head, I was like, oh, God, what did I say about Donald Trump? Like, I'm trying to remember, like, hey, no, I didn't swear. I don't think I said anything too inflammatory. Like, what could he possibly be talking about? So anyways, we finally connected on the phone. And he goes on to tell me that he was listening to episode, when was it? 19, where I answered all those questions. And on one of them, someone asked how I got into true crime. So I was telling this story about how when I was like 11, my parents sat me down and they made me watch a whole documentary on Ted Bundy. And it was like 2 hours. And it was to teach me that not even hot strangers are okay to let into your life, because even the hot ones can be murderers. Blah, blah, blah. I was super fascinated by how someone like Ted Bundy could do what he did. And now I love true crime and I listen to way too many true crime podcasts. So anyways, he's saying all that and he says, you have got the story wrong. And I was like, no, you have the story wrong. I remember everything. My mind is a vault. I am an elephant. And he was like, no, no, no. Here's what really happened, because you're missing a piece. So, he goes on to say, your mom was out getting groceries one day, and I was in the back pad working on my truck, so you and Zach were in the house alone. So you were up in your room doing something when the doorbell rang. So your little brother, who, let's see, if I was 11, he would have been about 8. He goes and answers the door, because he looks through the peephole, and it seems like a nice-looking guy. So the guy says, oh, hi, how are you? Introduces himself, trying to be nice. And then he says, are your parents home? And Zach goes, no, I'm here alone with my sister. And so the guy's kind of peeking in the house and looking kind of around. And allegedly, I came down the stairs and said hello. And we were chatting. And then allegedly, I was cool with it, I guess. I don't know. I don't have any memory of that. So that's why I say allegedly, because you can't prove that in a court of law. So then my dad came in to get a tool and he saw this total stranger standing like right inside our front door talking to his two vulnerable children. And he was like, who are you? And the guy just like left and ran off and shut the door. And that was that. I don't know. I feel like we're missing a piece. Like, did you follow him? Did he say anything? I don't know. That's what my dad tells me. So then he was like, Zach, what the heck? We have told you so many times you do not open the door for strangers. And my beautiful, sweet, naive little brother was like, well, but Dad, he looked nice. And so my dad, being the comedian he is, goes downstairs to the computer and pulls up a picture of Ted Bundy from Google. And he says, hey, Zach, take a look at this guy. Does he look nice? And Zach goes, oh, yeah, that looks like a really nice guy. And so he says, Alex, what about you? You think he looks nice? And I was like, yeah, he's handsome, like, looks like a nice guy. And then Dad was like, okay, I want to show you something. And so that's when we started watching the movie. And then my mom came home and she was ticked that my dad was showing us this two-hour documentary on Ted Bundy. And I so distinctly remember this part in the documentary where the camera is like, you know those true crime documentaries where it's like they follow the footsteps in the forest and it's like all misty and wet outside. And then narrator was like, then Ted would go back and fornicate with his victims multiple times in the woods. So it's pretty disturbing for two young kids. But listen, it did the trick because we both learned our lesson, stranger danger, even when they're hot. But joke's on my dad again because I literally am subscribed to so many true crime podcasts that I have a new one to listen to every single freaking day. And it will not end because I'm not caught up on any of the backlogs. So that is the edit for that story. You're welcome, Dad. Okay, so enough about that. Without further ado, let's talk about witches. So author Tish Thoyer wrote, we are the granddaughters of the witches you failed to burn. And I want that quote tattooed on my freaking forehead. I've mentioned this before, but when I first heard that quote, I just began weeping. I wept because that quote reminded me that as a feminist in 2018, I'm part of a long legacy of women fighting for what is right. Women like Joan of Arc, Mary Shelley, Harriet Tubman, Sophie Scholl, Gloria Steinem, and of course the notorious RBG. I was overwhelmed by this reminder of just like sisterhood. You know, a sisterhood that sacrificed everything, security, wealth, love, all of that, to make sure that future generations like me don't have to put up with the same old crap. It's a sisterhood that said, I believe I'm valuable simply because I am. Because when God dreamt of me, she fell in love with me. She saw all the mistakes I would make, all the times I would fall, and yet she still believed I was worthy of bringing into existence. I am man's helper and partner and equal participant in this beautiful world, and I am worthy of respect and equality. I wouldn't be where I am today without those women. I wouldn't have grown up in a home that encouraged me to pursue my dreams because historically a woman's only dream was required to be being a good wife and a mother. I wouldn't have the knowledge I do because historically women were barred from equal education, libraries, and politics. And I wouldn't have this platform because historically my voice would have no value. So the women who came before us knocked down walls to ensure that we get to occupy the spaces that we do today. When people, particularly women and marginalized groups, dismiss the feminist movement as just like rubbish, I often say, You know, you're only where you are today because of that garbage feminist movement. If it weren't for our feminist foresisters and forefathers, we'd still be living in a world that excluded women and marginalized people from absolutely every sphere of social life. Even in their own homes, these women's voices were silenced and their capabilities were ignored. And if these women were also black or disabled or homosexual, they would be totally shut out of any opportunity. These feminists of the past, whether they identified as a feminist or not, were often dismissed as witches. They were the troublemakers challenging the norm. They were the mad woman rambling on about nonsense. They were the hellraisers. They were the sex crazed. Today, a disgruntled individual might call them the bitches, but back then, they were called the witches. Some were burned, drowned, hanged, murdered for their audacious belief that they had something worth saying. Others survived and passed their ideas down to the next generation who did the same, who in turn will do the same. Today, I am proud to say that I'm the granddaughter of witches they failed to burn. My great-grandmother fled Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution and became one of the pioneers of a central Alberta town. She was a respected member of the community, and she was known for not taking any crap and providing valuable counsel. My grandmother milked cows with manicured nails and wrangled horses right alongside her older brothers. She embraces everything traditionally considered feminine, but this doesn't make her weak, it makes her even stronger. And my mom, who is a saint, is a passionate advocate of justice. She quit her job teaching lawyers to work for a nonprofit that provides humanitarian aid and relief to people all over the globe. And in her spare time, she volunteers for Victims Assistance, which is this police unit that comes alongside the victims of crime and supports them during, like, the worst days of their life. So maybe she is the OG true crime buff. At times, she was a stay-at-home mom, and even when she wasn't, she was the most devoted mom ever. She is strong and tender-hearted all at once. These women and many others in my family all have incredible, strong opinions and ideas. They are outspoken and have all refused to let religion confine them. Back in the day, they probably would have been considered witches and crazy. They would have either been locked up in jail, never signed out of a psychiatric institution, or they would be hung alongside the real witches. So sorry, ladies. I was joking with my mom the other day saying, like, honestly, thank God I was born in the 90s, because if I had been born way back in the day, I would have been burned at the stake. Like, can you imagine how quickly I would have been roasted had I lived with the Puritans of the 1600s challenging them on the gender of God? Truly, they would have been like, you're a demon, goodbye forever, you're not even a witch, you're the literal devil itself. So, what is the deal with women being convicted as witches? Well, let's go back to the Bible. In Leviticus 20:27, it is written, "A man or woman who is a medium or spiritist among you must be put to death. You are to stone them. Their blood will be on their own heads." So it's pretty clear regarding God's stance on consulting with the darker side of the spiritual world. And that's not a standalone verse. It's mentioned 20 plus times that any kind of sorcery or witchcraft is, like, strictly forbidden. So, to be clear, since all my grandmas listen to this podcast, I 100% stand by the Bible stance on this. I do not support any form of witchcraft. I don't think it's bogus. I think it is a very real, dangerous thing. Listen, anytime you are consulting with the devil, it cannot be good. And if you believe there is a devil, then there kind of has to also be a God. And why would you want to partner with the devil instead of God? It's the literal devil. The devil is the worst. I feel like I just adopted, like, a weird southern accent there. Sorry about that. Okay, so I have a friend whose mom, we'll just call her Susan for this podcast, got really into witchcraft when she was in her early 20s. She grew up in a really conservative Christian home. She was going through a hard time and kind of having a crisis of faith, and her friend invited her to like a legit witches gathering. She didn't know what was going to be that, but that's what turned out to be. Like, these scenes were not just women wearing pointy hats and making spooky potions that are actually just fancy cocktails. Like, these were people who legitimately practiced witchcraft. Susan was really quickly sucked in by the community aspect because she felt abandoned by her old church community and the sense of taking the power out of God's hands and into her own. So she wanted to control her own destiny. She thought it was harmless and kind of like a spiritual empowerment group, but crazy stuff began happening. So Susan began taking part in rituals and ceremonies. Halloween, she said, was kind of the big night for that. So you can be praying this Halloween for people to stay safe if they are wrapped up in that stuff. She would be journaling and she'd just go into a total trance, and then she'd snap out of it and realize she'd written 10 pages in a foreign script she'd never learned to write. She was able to communicate at times telekinetically with this friend of hers that introduced her to the group. If she tried to pick up her Bible, it would be hot to the touch. Like she said, she could pick it up and open it, but like she couldn't stand holding it because it was literally scorching hot to her. You might be thinking like, oh wow, what a fake story, but I trust this woman. She is an academic. She's highly educated. She has a ton of integrity, and she's never used her experiences to try to scare people straight. Like, I don't think she's being dramatic just for the sake of being like, and that's why you should turn to the Lord. Like, she is a very level-headed woman of integrity, and she's been able to use her experience to help others. So it all kind of came to a head when her mom was putting away laundry and found pages of documents on a ritual Susan was going to participate in that would involve her sacrificing her parents. The pages detailed exactly how she was going to kill her mom and dad, and when she was confronted with it, she genuinely had no recollection of writing it, but like it was in her handwriting. She just said she remembers sobbing uncontrollably and shaking, and like she couldn't control her body. It was like she was having a seizure, but she felt like there was a literal, not figurative, literal like a vice around her chest squeezing and squeezing, and then she passed out. So that was kind of a wake-up call. She turned back to the church for support as she cut off this witch group thing she'd been involved in. Her and her parents decided to take like all her books and journals that she had with all the witchcraft content and burn them. So they made a fire. They lived on a farm. So they made a fire to throw everything into. And she swears, and I believe her, that this stuff literally could not burn. Like, they stood there watching as not a single loose leaf piece of paper, even so much as got crispy on the edges. Like, it would not burn. So they ended up standing there just praying around it. And after 2 hours of, like, intense prayer, the stuff finally began to burn. So Susan's actually become a counselor that specializes in helping people who are leaving the occult, which I think is so cool. She's helped a lot of people in really healthy ways. So she's not like drowning people in holy water and leading these big dramatic Steven Spielberg level exorcisms. She's just giving them very practical steps on how to get them out of that world because it's a really long process. So you guys, this stuff is really real and it is very dangerous, so don't kid yourselves. But during the witch hunts of the past, not all people thought to be witches were actually witches. And that's the problem. Okay, so even those who were legitimately practicing witchcraft didn't deserve to be burned at the stake or hung because it's not up to us to pass holy judgment. Only God can do that. But those were the laws of the day, and thank God they are no longer. So the witch hunt started in Europe. Several centuries ago, many practicing Christians and those of other religions had a strong belief that the devil could give certain people known as witches the power to harm others in return for their loyalty. So a witchcraft craze rippled through Europe from the 1300s to the end of the 1600s. Tens of thousands of supposed witches, mostly women, were executed. There's a lot of reasons why there was this big craze about witches and why they were being killed during this time. So first, you can kind of blame the weather. Across Europe, weather suddenly got wetter and colder, which is a phenomenon known as the Little Ice Age that just like totally pelted villages with freak frost and floods and hailstorms and plagues of mice and caterpillars, which sounds disgusting. So witch hunts tended to correspond with ecological disasters and crop failures, along with accompanying problems like famine and disease and inflation and all of that. So witches were supposedly to blame for cursing their villages. So if you looked like the kind of person that could hold a grudge, you could have been accused. So Helga down the street is bitter because she's a husbandless, childless, ugly, poor 27-year-old. And so she cursed our village. And that's why we have famine and our crops are failing and it's snowing all the freaking time. So she is a witch. Kill her. Another reason is economic. So the Protestant Christian Church and Catholicism were rising up as kind of the two major religions, with Protestantism fighting for its share of the pie is the newer theme. So as competition for religious market share heated up, churches began expanding beyond the standard spiritual services they provided, like, you know, giving last rites and praying for healing and all those nice fluffy kind of things. And they really began focusing on salvation from devilry here on earth. So among both the Catholics and the Protestants, witch hunting became a prime service for attracting and appeasing the masses by demonstrating their Satan-fighting prowess. So now Gertrude down the street is having wild sex orgies with the devil. But look, we have killed her and defeated the devil. See you Sunday at 9 a.m. for our sermon on forgiveness at the United Anti-Witch Church of the Lord and not of those dumb Catholics. So what's crazy is that before all of this, witchcraft was pretty common. And again, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it surely wasn't like burn at the stake worthy. So for centuries, common folk had widely believed in witchcraft. People bought and sold magical services like love potions and spells to help find stolen belongings. Up until around this time, the Catholic Church hadn't really been that worried about witches and witchcraft, let alone interested in prosecuting them. But as it sometimes does, folklore turned into fact, and suddenly people were being accused of doing stuff that no legitimate witch ever did in the first place. So it was a total gone show. And this gone show spread to America as European immigrants settled in places like Salem, Massachusetts. So the Salem witch trials are by far the most famous, so let's talk about those. The witch trials happened during a period of economic unease, with some Salem families faring better than others. Salem society was permeated by interpersonal conflicts, many of which stemmed from competition over resources. Historian Edward Bever has noted that such conflict included gossip, insults, scolding, threats, curses, ritual magic, legal action, and various forms of physical assault. In this environment, women were consigned to really rigid roles, so mother, wife, caretaker. They had one job, producing obedient religious children. Women who stepped outside of those rigid boundaries were seen as working with Satan, because why else would a woman reject some antiquated traditional role other than that she loves Satan? So, as descendants of Eve, the original woman to fall from grace, women were viewed by the Puritans as vulnerable to temptations like desire for material possessions or sexual satisfaction. Being homeless, poor, or childless was cause for concern, and these women were targeted by the trials. So in January of 1692, Reverend Paris, who is Salem's like house resident reverend, his daughter Elizabeth, who was 9, and his niece Abigail Williams, who was 11, started having what they called fits. So they screamed, threw things, uttered peculiar sounds, and contorted themselves into strange positions. And a local doctor blamed the supernatural. So another girl, Ann Putnam, age 11, experienced similar episodes. On February 29th, under pressure from magistrates Jonathan Corwin and John Hawthorne, the girls blamed 3 women for afflicting them. Tituba, the Paris' Caribbean slave, Sarah Good, a homeless beggar, and Sarah Osborne, an elderly, impoverished woman. And please note that these are all marginalized women who were not readily accepted by society to begin with. So all 3 women were brought before the local magistrates and interrogated for several days starting on March 1st, 1692. Osborne claimed innocence, as did Good, but Tituba confessed. She said, "The devil came to me and bid me serve him." So she really messed up, you guys. She was legit. She definitely was a witch and kind of embraced it, but the others, not so much. So with this seed of paranoia planted, a stream of accusations followed for the next few months. So charges against Martha Corey, a loyal member of the church in Salem Village, greatly concerned the community because, like, if she could be a witch, then anyone could. Magistrates even questioned Sarah Good's 4-year-old, Dorothy, and her timid answers, because she's a shy 4-year-old in court, were enough to be constructed as a confession. So they're just going ham with their charges now. Bridget Bishop was hanged in 1692 for being a convicted witch, the first of 19 hangings in Salem, and some accounts put the total at 20 people executed at the end of the day. So 13 of those executed for witchcraft and devil worship were women, many of whom made people uncomfortable by simply being, like, unruly. So Bishop, by all accounts, was not a witch. She was just a woman who didn't abide by the Puritan culture of the time. She was married 3 times. She's known for dressing exotically by Puritan standards. So, like, she flashed her ankle once. I don't know. She liked drinking at taverns, fighting publicly with her husbands, and just generally disregarding Puritan societal standards. But she declared her innocence at her execution, obviously to no avail because they didn't believe her. Following the trials and executions, many involved, like Judge Samuel Sewall, publicly confessed error and guilt. So upon further reflection, they were like, yeah, maybe they weren't witches. And they, like, gave money to the descendants of the people they killed, being like, "Oh, we're sorry. Take this and go away." But it wasn't until 1957, more than 250 years later, that Massachusetts finally formally apologized for the events back in 1692 with the Salem witch trials. So women were much more likely to be considered a possible witch simply because, in the eyes of the Puritans, were more susceptible to falling for temptation, thanks for nothing, Eve, and were not as enlightened as men. It's pretty horrifying to consider how easy it was for a woman to be convicted and executed for witchcraft in the 17th century, and just how little power we had to prove our innocence. Like, right now, I don't want to go into the whole criminal justice system because it's a gone show. But generally, there's the assumption of you're innocent until proven guilty, whereas during the witch trials, it was like, you're guilty, try to prove you're innocent, it won't work because you're a dumb woman, why would we believe you? So just for fun, I did some research, and here are some of the things you could do to get yourself labeled a witch. Number 1, you're a woman. Women were much more likely to be accused, as said before. Number 2, you have a beauty mark. Any standout physical features like beauty marks, birthmarks, or even a bunch of freckles were considered the devil's mark, so therefore you were a witch. Number 3, you're bad at public speaking. So one of the ways they would see if these women were witches is they would have them read scripture, because I guess if you've made a deal with the devil, it's hard to read scripture. So if you weren't good at reading off the top of your head in public, just like many of us aren't, you're a witch. Number four, you have few or no children. So families were really big back then. You had a lot of kids just to give yourself better odds of some of them surviving, to be quite honest. So if you didn't have a lot or any kids, you were a jealous witch casting curses on those more fortunate. And number five, you are perceived as bitchy. A woman who dared to speak her mind, disagree with a male authority figure, or just generally not be thrilled with life in Salem in the 1600s would be considered a witch, since only the devil could cause discontent, not like, I don't know, the patriarchy. So pretty much every woman I know, including myself, could have been convicted as being a witch based on these telltale signs of fraternizing with the devil. This is insane. So many innocent women were killed due to the witch hunts. Women were marginalized for their audacity to be unique human beings. They weren't allowed to be poor or uneducated or opinionated or unable to conceive. They were targeted because they didn't represent the church's ideal for women to be a submissive, beautiful mother and wife. So in summary of all of that, the witch hunts reflect a long history of women being vulnerable to the whims and insecurities of men in power. You can't just accuse someone of being a witch simply because they have a vagina. So that's it, you guys. There's not really a good spin on it besides the fact that women saw this and were like, that's not right, and have been fighting to make sure that doesn't happen and that those reasons aren't viable to accuse people as witches ever since. So because of that, there are a lot of us who are the granddaughters of the witches that they failed to burn. The women who had voices and opinions and who believed in their worth and their value to society. Women like that who weren't killed by the patriarchy, essentially. So thank you to the Smithsonian Magazine, Washington Post, Bustle, and a number of academic journals for the helpful information as I did research for today's episode. And have a very safe Halloween, y'all. Thanks. Bye.